Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Iowans drive past acres and acres of soybean fields every summer and fall. But what happens to those soybeans after harvest? David Geiger is an agriculture journalist and host of the Agribusiness Report, seen on WHO in Des Moines, KCRG in Cedar Rapids, and KYOU in Ottumwa. And for the last 3 years, he's been working on a side project, a documentary that follows a soybean from a farm in Illinois to a table in South Korea. Journey of a Bean is now streaming on YouTube, and David is here to tell us about it. Hi, David.
Charity, thank you so much. I'm really honored to be here.
Well, thank you for being here. Tell me how the idea for this project came to you. I mean, you're doing agricultural journalism, so you're reporting on soybeans and corn and all kinds of other things all the time. But how did this idea come to you?
So the Agribusiness Report is actually owned by the Agribusiness Association of Iowa, and they have a big annual conference every February. And I just happened to be there talking to some of the members and some of the board members, and one of them worked with Schooler Company, who is covered in my documentary. And Schooler Company, this guy was telling me that he could tell you the field a soybean was grown in all the way to a place in China or Japan or wherever it goes. And I was just really amazed by that. And I thought that that deserved a little extra coverage, more so than I could do on my normal reporting.
Right. So usually we think, okay, soybeans are grown. We know that many of them are exported. And that's sort of the last part of that that we think about. But the processing process and the tracking process has changed and become so precise that you can actually follow the beans from a field to where they're processed in any country that they go to at this point.
Exactly. And there's so many different types of varieties and hybrids of grain, either corn or soybeans, that you have to kind of keep it separate in one way or another for whether it's used for the grain or whether it's going to be used for other products. And so especially when it comes to these very specialized products, you have to keep them separated. And so, yeah, exactly. Funny you mentioned that, too, is I actually had not been into a cleaning facility yet for making the beans clean.
Once they go to the grain bin and they get taken and they're sold, the next step was the part that you stepped into. I think a lot of us are familiar with what the farming operation looks like. But tell me about this processing, the cleaning facility, because that was a really fascinating part of the film to see what happens to these beans once they get there.
So when you think cleaning, it's not like washing with water or anything like that. What they're doing is they're getting rid of sand or bad seeds or very light products that they don't want as part of their core grade. And
so they want a very uniform soybean.
Exactly. And so they put it through something called a gravity separator, where basically they shake the beans on this tilted process, and the light stuff goes to the top and the heavy stuff goes to the bottom, and the stuff in the middle gets sifted into what they want to be there. So it's a very precise and exact science.
The farmer that you worked with, he's growing non-GMO soybeans because he realized that there was a market for that. That's the market that he wanted to be a part of. And so, of course, if somebody's buying non-GMO soybeans, it's really important to them that that's what they're getting. Tell me how the processing process works to make sure that these are non-GMO beans.
So the Schooler facility that I went to used a third-party resource for this because they need to have that verification for the end users in South Korea, because South Korean buyers are a little bit more picky when it comes to GMO, non-GMO products. And so they needed to have a third-party resource to double-check, verify. They check themselves, but they also verify it with another resource.
And they check twice. They check the beans, they clean the beans, they check the beans again. So this is and then they get checked again once they get to South Korea. Why did you decide to follow soybeans to South Korea? We export soybeans all over the world. So why South Korea?
So honestly, I thought it was going to go to China or Japan when it first started. But ultimately, when the farmer's growing this, at least in this specialty program that my farmer, Dustin Carstensen, was in, he doesn't know until they order it, until Schooler says, hey, we want to send your beans somewhere. And so I got the call in pretty much 5 months before I went to South Korea that, oh, hey, these soybeans were bought and they're going to be headed over there because, you know, it takes several weeks to go by train. Then it takes a couple months to go by boat. And then it'll be a couple weeks there through their customs
process.
So you
weren't necessarily planning a trip to South Korea?
No. It was kind of a little impromptu.
Do you feel incredibly fortunate that South Korea is what you picked? Because our trade agreement with South Korea did get renegotiated, but it got renegotiated fairly successfully. There weren't many changes made to that trade agreement. And, of course, as we know, the trade agreement with China has dramatically changed or not been agreed upon. And so did you feel really lucky that this whole operation, this trade operation that you profiled, is relatively unchanged, even with the trade wars going on?
100%. I was very I didn't know very much about South Korea when I first went there, but I was very glad to go there because not only was it a very easy country for me to bring video equipment to or any of that, it also was just a great place to visit. I mean, it was fantastic. I love the culture. I love the language. I love all that stuff. So it was definitely fun.
So I think a lot of us, if we do bother to think about the soybeans that are going to Asia, I think a lot of us assume that they're made into tofu, and a lot of them are made into tofu, but not these beans. Tell me what they got made into.
So these beans got turned into something called doenjang, which is a condiment in South Korea, used a lot in their soups. So I tried some of their soup when it was finally end processed. The specific product for this was something called a jangukjang, jangukjang, and that's a little bit more fermented bean than normal. So,
it's a fermented soybean paste.
Yes, fermented soybean paste, and that's kind of a very traditional food dish in South Korea.
And you got to go to the plant where this fermented soybean paste is made, but you didn't get to go into the fermentation chambers.
Yes, they let me and everywhere else except for filming inside the fermentation chambers itself. They called it a company secret of some kind. And, you know, I wasn't going to argue because they let me into the facility.
Right. So what did you learn when you were in that facility?
It was a relatively simple process. They simply boiled the beans and then they put them into these bags and put it at a certain temperature so that they could ferment in the way that they wanted it to. And then they added salt and put it in a machine and had their workers just package it. Right after that, it was a very, very straightforward process.
All right. And you wanted to follow these beans from the field to the table. And tell me how you made that part happen. I mean, again, you didn't have contacts in South Korea. So how did you make that leap?
So that's actually where one of the biggest hiccups of the whole process came, because I was going to go to the store that they were sold in and then potentially talk to somebody at that store and maybe figure out something like that. But South Koreans are very private people. And as a TV guy myself, I noticed on their local TV news that they would blur out faces. They're not super interested in talking in a lot of ways. They're very private. And so once the got
and
done
you
with
don't
the,
speak Korean.
I don't speak Korean.
Okay.
I was like, oh, I'll learn some Korean things. And so, you know, I learned 안녕하세요 and so hello. And that was it. I speak some Portuguese because I was a missionary kid, but South Korean was so much harder than that. And so I was going to go to this store, and they told me at the facility, I was like, hey, we called the store that this is going to, and they're not really comfortable with the camera being there. They don't really want to be filmed or anything like that. So I was at a loss. I thought, I followed the beans all the way here. What do I do? So I went to a very large grocery store in Seoul just to see some of the products on the shelves. And then I had a pretty good relationship with my Airbnb host. And my hostess made a little doenjang soup for me.
All right. So you got to watch her use this kind of fermented bean paste. But she didn't actually use the product that you followed, right?
No, not at all. And that was actually one of the funny parts, because she was very old fashioned. She was the type of person that preferred to go to the countryside where she had family who made traditional doenjang. And she talked about how local food is something that she really appreciates, which is funny because that's a really important concept over here, too. We push local food and why that's important. But as I talked to some people, especially with the U.S. Grains Export Council over there, it's a faster, high-paced society now. So a lot of people can't really afford to go to local food places or have the family in the country. And so they do just will buy the store-bought doenjang.
Right. Well, and you talk about this in the documentary as well. South Korea is just not that large. So there's far more demand for soybean products than could be met by farmers in South Korea, right?
Totally. South Korea has a demand of 1.3 million metric tons of soybeans, and they only produce 100,000 of that. 300,000 million metric tons go to 300,000 metric tons goes to food. The rest goes to oil or feed. And so they have a huge demand. They need soybeans to able to meet their demand. And they get a lot of that from the United States.
You decided that you wanted to make this documentary on your own. You made this entirely on your own, and it's independent. You have published it on YouTube, so anybody can watch it. Why did you make that decision? Why did you decide not to try to pitch it to a producer?
That's a great question. I kind of wanted to have a little bit of creative license and liberty. I'm not much of a business person myself, so I didn't want to have to do battle with, oh, will money make this happen or will it not? So I just self-funded it. And honestly, a big part of that decision was I felt like doing something pro bono for fun as a side project, as a first documentary, would be a little bit more fun and let me get a little bit more access to certain places by saying, oh, this is just a free thing as a journalist that I'm doing. So
as I mentioned, it's streaming on YouTube, but what do you imagine the future is for this documentary? What are your hopes?
Honestly, I just like people to watch it. I just would like people to see how important this process that we have for macroeconomic global trade, the story of comparative advantage. I think that all of these things are really important. And when we as Americans go get our food, we don't think of it as coming from a farm in a lot of ways. We think of it as coming from the store. And there's so much more of a process when it comes to how that happens in other countries that don't have the same food options as we do. South Korea is a great example. 85% of their terrain is mountainous, and they're 2/3 the size of Illinois. But they have 51 million people there. So they're 4 times larger than Illinois. And they, just as an example, are a people that can do something really great, like make their Samsung phones or whatever, but they can't grow the same amount of food that we can.
What do you think you took away from this process? Because, as an agriculture journalist, these are exchanges that you know about. None of this was really a surprise to you, but what did you learn that was surprising?
I think the most important thing learning about this whole process, this whole food process, is this story of farmers, but not just farmers, but also the people who work along this process. It's a lot of jobs that go through this whole process of transportation, of trade, of associations, of farming, of processing. And all of these just kind of lead back to one of the reasons why I find agriculture so important and so good is ultimately that people are important. And agriculture is important because people are important, because people need to be fed and because people need to live. And I'm able to do my job as a journalist because I can get money and then go buy food. I don't have to grow my own food. And so this whole idea here of being able to produce stuff here and send it somewhere else and have stuff over there sent over here just shows me that people are important across the world so that we can engage in trade. We can engage in this story of comparative advantage.
What do you want people who watch this documentary to take away from it?
I'd just like them to see a little bit more the backside of how food goes places, and that stuff that you see on the side of the roads as you're driving through the interstate, corn, soybeans, that's not just going here, that's going around the world, and it's a huge economic driver here in Iowa.
What did you think of the soup?
It was really good. It was really good. I was very surprised. I'm not a huge tofu fan, and she put a little tofu in there, but it was super tasty.
All right. Does it taste like anything you've ever had before?
It tasted very similar to a lot of the basic beef stew broths or things like that that you'd have here, except, you know, it was made entirely of vegetables in this case. It was very vegetarian on the dish that she gave me.
Right. I think fermented soybean paste is something that a lot of Americans would think, I don't think that's something that I would try. Did you actually try the paste so that you had the full flavor of what it was like?
You know, I didn't actually even think to do that. I know that there's some folks who'll eat a soybean or things like that. I prefer to have the finished cooked product myself. But, you know, that is an interesting story, too, about how cultures give so much to different cultures. Because a place like South Korea, they like their kimchi. They like fermented foods. And mm-hmm. Here in the United States, I mean, the closest thing we get to fermented food is pickles.
So do you have another project in mind?
You know, right now, not really. I'm sticking with just my normal reporting for now and seeing if anything else comes my way. I'm not opposed to trying something else, but after 3 years, I think I want a little bit of a break, too.
All right. Well, David, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you, Charity. This was fantastic.
David Geiger is an agriculture journalist. He's also host of the Agribusiness Report, seen on WHO in Des Moines, KCRG in Cedar Rapids, and KYOU in Ottumwa. The new documentary that he's made entirely independently is called Journey of a Bean, and it's now streaming on YouTube. You can find it there. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio. Our producers are Rick Brewer, Matt Alvarez, Caitlin Harrop, and Dennis Reese. You can follow us on Twitter at Iowa Public Radio and on Facebook, of course, at Iowa Public Radio. And please subscribe to our podcast. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa.